If you believe that Richard Nixon's contribution to our nation and the world stage ended in 1974 when he resigned, then you have been missing out on a rather fantastic story of not just politics, but also of redemption that, for the first time, my next guest reveals in his new book. It brings you the details of how a strong leader fell literally to the bottom, but couldn't lose that desire to be relevant. The strategy and the steps that he took created connections, his redemption needed, that resulted into his giving insight and guidance that influenced presidents and world affairs for close to 20 years. With us now to share some of these stories featured in his book, After the Fall, The Remarkable Comeback of Richard Nixon, is former advisor to President George W. Bush and California Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger, Casey Pipes. How are you today, Casey?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on.
KCSPipes.com is Casey's website. Learn more about his work and his book, After the Fall. This took you quite some time because you were going into, other than for the former president's family, uncharted territory. No one was able to get into the material that you were given access to, were they?
No, that's right. This is sort of the last great untold Nixon story, and part of the reason why is the post-presidential papers are privately controlled by the family. So I had to secure authorization from both daughters, which I was able to do in 2009, and it took me about 10 years to kind of go through them and find the story, and what I found was even more remarkable than what I thought I was going to find. He was more active during this time period and more successful during this time period than we've ever realized before. And that's the story that's in After the Fall, the book.
Although that in-between time of the fall and the rise, there was that momentary time where we were close to losing him.
Yeah, he almost dies in the fall of 1974. He has an acute attack of phlebitis, and the walls of his arteries become so inflamed that the blood flow is restricted, and he's rushed into emergency surgery in Long Beach. He survives it, and I think that's really one of the turning points, is he sort of realizes he can't just sit around and feel sorry for himself. It's not his nature anyway. But the hospitalization sort of brings home to him, he's got to get moving. He's got to find something he can do to sort of climb out of this hole he's in emotionally and physically and mentally. And he does it by working. He does it by writing 9 books, bestsellers on foreign policy, by speaking publicly again, and letting the public see him, and by appearing on television. And those 3 things bring him a level of redemption that allows him in the 1980s to really become an informal advisor and counselor to President Reagan and then later President Bush and President Clinton, which is where he makes real contributions on foreign policy, many of which we've never known about before.
Was it redemption that he was looking for? Did Nixon want, in effect, a restoration to the spot that he had but lost?
I think it was a little of both. I mean, he certainly felt remorse over what had happened. He also felt he had paid a huge price for what had happened. And he felt like his life's work was incomplete, that he had not been allowed to finish the presidency, particularly his foreign policy goals had been left unachieved. And so, particularly with Reagan, he sees a moment in time with Reagan and Gorbachev where something special could happen, and he wants to be a part of that. He has a pretty good relationship with Reagan going back to their days in California, and he begins advising not only Reagan but his senior team, many of whom he knows personally, about how to negotiate with Gorbachev. And that's some of the more fascinating material in the book, is how he saw those negotiations and how he advised Reagan, particularly on SDI, which, of course, was Reagan's nuclear defense shield. Nixon doubts it'll ever work as a matter of technology, but he loves the leverage it gives Reagan, and he urges him to use it. And then when Gorbachev is threatening to pull out of the negotiations, Nixon is one of the people who suggests, why not offer to share the SDI technology with him? That way it'll force him back to the negotiating table, defuse the situation, and of course, it's exactly what Reagan does, and it works. And we've never known until now that Nixon played a role in that. Those are some of the stories that I found that were just fascinating that are in this book.
Over Casey Pipes and his book, After the Fall, The Remarkable Comeback of Richard Nixon, KCSPipes.com is the website. and you're listening to Issues and Ideas. Going back to television, it's kind of ironic because 1960, Nixon on television with the debate with then-candidate John F. Kennedy, it was just a disaster. But the Nixon and TV with David Frost, was that part of the strategy Nixon had, or did that, maybe even to Nixon's surprise, turn into almost a public psychiatric session where he purged himself of anything?
Well, he certainly wanted the television exposure. He wrote in his diary in late 1974 that this comeback would have to be built on writing books, making speeches, and appearing on television. He had to be seen again by the public in order for there to be any kind of redemption, any kind of a comeback. So the Frost interviews are a huge opportunity for him. Of course, he's paid, and he's broke and needs the money desperately. He's paid $600,000. But the interviews themselves are a huge turning point in this story because they're so widely watched. I mean, the first episode of the interviews draw 45 million people. It's to this day still the largest political interview in history, the largest audience. And so he has the chance to speak to millions and millions of people about his version of events. And, of course, one of the big myths about the Frost interviews is that Frost sort of brilliantly trapped him in this Watergate conversation and, you know, got something close to a confession out of him. What I found in the research was quite different. I interviewed Ken Kachigian, who was Nixon's aide, who was with him at the time, and they actually had sort of wordsmithed in the green room beforehand what Nixon was going to say. They certainly knew the questions were coming, and Nixon offers something of a public apology. Now, he stops well short of admitting criminal wrongdoing, but he says that it snowballed out of control. I let the country down. I screwed it up. Very, very honest language. And at one point even says, I impeached myself. He wanted people to hear him say this. And this becomes the messaging he uses for the rest of his life when he's asked about Watergate. He never admits to criminal wrongdoing, which he didn't think he had done. But he did admit to moral failures and letting the country down and disappointing the country. And he returns to that formula throughout the rest of his life whenever he's asked this question. So it's a remarkable moment, and the Frost interviews are an important part of the comeback.
And what he said in the Frost interviews, that was a pretty close cousin to what his official, I guess, quote-unquote apology was that he had to issue in exchange for getting the pardon from President Ford.
It was. In fact, that story's in the book as well, kind of the negotiations back and forth with Ford's team about the wording of the statements they wanted Nixon to put out. And again, and the final version of the statement is pretty remorseful. I mean, he talks about the burden that he has to live with for the rest of his life. And that sort of permeates this whole story, that he is living with this burden, and he's trying to find a way not to explain it away and not even to look to the past, but to look to the future and use his gifts, his intellectual gifts, to be useful. And the way he can do that is on foreign policy. And the book After the Fall really documents just how successful he was in that venture.
With everything going on in the world today internationally, with China, for example, Russia, North Korea, what would Nixon today be saying to President Trump, do you think?
I mean, it's hard to speculate. The one thing we do know is there are similarities between the two men and how they see the world. Nixon came from the realism school of foreign policy. This is the idea that American foreign policy should be based on promoting American national interest. He was not into humanitarian causes or building hospitals or schools or even building democracies. Of course, we've had a series of presidents in recent years much more out of the idealism school, that America should do good around the world. We tried to create a democracy in the Middle East and Iraq. President Obama waxed poetic about the Arab Spring. I mean, these are sort of idealistic approaches. Trump is a throwback in many ways to Nixon, that American policy should simply be about our interest. Last week he was asked about policy overseas in the Middle East, and he sort of scoffed at the motion that, you know, we can't be the policemen of the world, and we've got to come home, and we can't build schools and hospitals for everybody. This is an approach based on realism. Now, it's not as effective or as coherent at times as Nixon was, but I think Trump would say that he's trying to pursue realism in foreign policy, and that is a very real connection point between the two.
This is an amazing book. It just fills in so many blanks, and if you were confused about the man and the president, Richard Nixon, they're in so many ways one and the same, and so many other ways two individuals. Casey's book, After the Fall, The Remarkable Comeback of Richard Nixon, clarifies any confusion and might even change your mind if you were maybe after all these years still angry at what then-President Nixon did. I think you'll find that in redemption, that springs out forgiveness in some people. Maybe that'll be you as well. Again, the book is After the Fall, The Remarkable Comeback of Richard Nixon. KCSPipes.com, Casey's website. That's Casey with K, by the way. Casey Pipes, thanks so much for doing a long overdue just honor for one of our great leaders who gave well past the point where he had to. And thanks for being here today.
Thanks for having me. I enjoyed it.